Hi, and welcome to Let's Talk About It with Shania Kelly, a podcast where every opinion matters. I'm a 20-something master's social worker based in the Lehigh Valley of Pennsylvania. I bring to you an open and collaborative space where I give voices to the unheard and the unknown on important social topics. So please join me in this space and let's talk about it. Hi, everyone. I hope that you are all doing well. This season is wrapping up and it will actually be ending with this three-part series on entrepreneurship and if leaving the 9-to-5 is for everyone. So in today's episode, I will be sitting with Dr. Judy Fernandez. She is an inspiring social worker who has founded her own way into entrepreneurship, which doesn't happen very often for us social workers because it's not preached. So let's get into this conversation. Thank you for tuning in. Hello, everyone. We are back with another episode and we have an amazing guest with us today, Judy Fernandez. And we're going to be talking about entrepreneurship and if it's accessible for everyone and kind of getting into what are some of the influences as to why people are leaving the 9-to-5 and taking on the challenge of owning their own business. So Judy, if you'd like to take a second to introduce yourself to everyone and all of our listeners today.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me. I'm Judy Fernandez. I'm a licensed clinical social worker, and I own a group therapy practice in New York.
Nice. Thank you so much. So let's get into today's question. So I know you just mentioned that you run your own group in New York. So is this your business or do you have any other kind of business ventures going on?
This is my business. I have been in solo practice for a few years. Okay. And I decided this summer that I was going to open a group practice. So I had started planning for that like 6 months to a year prior. And the main reason that I wanted to open it was mainly to create accessible and affordable services for individuals who are seeking therapy, specifically in communities where mental health is still stigmatized.
Okay.
So we are a telehealth practice right now in New York, and we'll probably be branching out to Jersey and some other states in the tri-state area
The
next year or so.
Please come to PA.
And then hopefully California next year.
Okay, that's amazing. And, I just want to thank you for seeing a gap within your community and being part of the solution to bridging that gap. There's many of resources out there sometimes, but like you said, accessibility is so important. And if someone can't afford something, then of course they don't have access to it. So, and congrats to you also for, creating something and for what I think is such a short period of time and being successful with it too. That's a major accomplishment.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Of course. So with your business, what is your overall kind of mission and goal? Like, what would you like to see it become one day?
So for the group practice, my goal is to reach right now by the end of the year, we're probably going to have about 3 or 4 other therapists, including myself. And then, a longer term goal is to maintain the practice, make sure that we're providing not just affordable and access to services, but also quality services.
Right.
And so not expanding at a rate where the quality of services is going down. In the practice, I do hire a lot of LMSWs or pre-licensed therapists, because I really think that it's a good place to learn that's outside of a typical clinical setting.
Right.
And, I'm able to provide that supervision as well to help you kind of learn what your niche is and what you want to do when you're fully licensed. So in addition to just, being able to provide the mental health services, my goal is to also, as a social worker, to be able to provide that support to other social workers, because sometimes we get thrown into things and we don't know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
We don't really have any training. And the work is always there for us. And especially at internships, or just I remember my first 9-to-5 job. It was like, here's your cases. This is what you do. Go to
Yes.
the home. And
Yes.
you just kind of got to figure it out. So just being able to provide support in those various ways.
And I also, appreciate your point on hiring LMSWs, because I feel like an opportunity like yours may not be available or a accessible to LMSWs. My apologies. I feel that, those kind of opportunities may only really be accessible to LCSWs, or at least that's what I see in the state of Pennsylvania in the Lehigh Valley. So I appreciate you for kind of, like you said, creating a space where LMSWs can get that important time, and they can also have supervision, because I know there's some circumstances where LMSWs have to outsource for supervision and pay someone to kind of oversee them to get their LCSW. And I feel like that's very difficult and unfortunate that people have to outsource for supervision. So
Yeah,
I
absolutely.
definitely appreciate you for creating that kind of opportunity as well. So when you mentioned your 9-to-5 experience, it didn't sound too great. I feel like intro experiences for social work a lot of time is not that fantastic. So if you just want to kind of divulge a little bit, what was your experience in the 9-to-5 as a social worker?
Yeah, so it was kind of hit or miss, right, with nonprofit agencies. The majority of my career, I've been in child welfare. And so I've worked with children and families, connecting them to resources, either, because they've had a mental health diagnosis or chronic medical conditions. And various agencies in New York City. I will say the last 9-to-5 that I had was probably the best that I had. And that was because the flexibility, the agency like really ca actually cared about their employees. The benefits of like giving us self-care days. Yeah, it was really good. But I think the And so at that program, I was overseeing a care coordination program in New York City. And when you're in an environment like that, then that's how you learn to lead a program with, like that. So, we have sick time and we have vacation time, but when I was at other places, no one was using it, right? Like you're not supposed to use it. And so this place like really encouraged you to take time off. And it wasn't until like my second or third year in the role as director where I had a new supervisor, and she was like, "You haven't taken a vacation in almost 2 years." Yeah, and then we're like in this culture of like overworking because taking time off is seen as taboo, and if you are on vacation, then you should work while you're on vacation. Yeah, so, you learn those type of things, I think, also from a 9-to-5, even at the places where it wasn't that great to work. You kind of learn what you want to do and what you don't want to do. So when you transition to doing your own thing, you're able to implement some of those things.
And I know one of the things that you mentioned that I always kind of look for in a place of work is flexibility. And I know in social work it's super hard because you have major responsibilities because you're working with people's lives. So wanting to give yourself flexibility and give yourself that time on comes with that guilt, saying like, oh, if I take off this day, then I'm not going to be able to meet this person and help them with this. Especially, when you're a case manager and doing resource coordination, you feel like you're letting someone down, if you take that day off. And you don't really think about the fact that you're letting yourself down in that time too. So, I think that having flexibility, having self-care days is really amazing. And I hope that I feel like there's been a shift in the 9-to-5. I don't know if it has really gotten to the social work field as much, but I do hope that there are more leaders like yourself that will provide a workspace where we're not seeing as much turnover or people leaving just because they're so burnt out from the work and they can't be as passionate and present as they want to be because of the effects of the work environment.
Yeah, I will say I think COVID definitely shifted that for a lot of places, even in the social work field, because a lot of the work that we were doing was always in person.
Yes.
And even during the pandemic, I was going out and doing visits, like when my case managers got COVID and they couldn't go out and do them.
Okay.
And so, but there is the flexibility of like, oh, well, I can do my paperwork and things at home and then go into the field. So there, I think that has shifted a bit, but also you don't have to be, in the field or be a therapist to feel like this work is heavy.
Yes.
It's heavy for everyone.
Right. At every level.
And I was working in a men's shelter for a while as the clinical coordinator there, and we had clinical and operational staff. And the operational staff, was breaking up fights all the time with the guys. That has to take a toll on you, right?
Yes.
And you're not doing any of like the clinical work, which also takes a toll on you. But I think just the field in general, it's so important to take care of yourself.
It really is, and I do hope that, more people are understanding the importance of self-care and knowing that we are given vacation time and sick time and personal time for a reason, and that we are able to use that time. Of course, there's scheduling and things to do, but it is important. And I think it's also important to say that I'm sure and I hope that everyone's trying to do their best, especially when working in this field. So like you said, even people that that people might not think have a tough job compared to someone who's doing, clinical work. Everyone's doing a tough job in this field, and you're not alone in the tough job either. So there's people to talk to. And I think,
Absolutely.
right, having that support is also as important as the structure of the workplace as well.
Yes, definitely.
Let's take a quick moment to listen to the ads that keep this show going, and then we'll get right back into the episode. If you're interested into getting into holistic healing, I invite you to check out my dear friend Jess K's Healings. Jess is a Reiki master, integrated energy therapist, oracle card reader, and a certified hypnotherapist. She's passionate about her work and has a variety of services for you and your family and friends. So check out her information in the show notes. Save yourself that trip to the market with Instacart. Instacart delivers groceries in as fast as 1 hour. I've used them a few times now, and it has been really helpful for me when I need groceries, but maybe I can't make that trip or I'm not really feeling like traveling that day. They connect you with a personal shopper in your area, and they hand select and deliver your groceries from your favorite stores. They're connected to all the favorite places that I go to in my area, and I'm sure they're connected to yours too. Following the link in the show notes lets Instacart know that we sent you, that you support our show, and it also gets you free delivery on your first order over $35. So, do you feel like leaving the traditional workforce as a social worker is something that is attainable for most people?
I think it depends on what you want to do when you leave. Just thinking about like my experience as leaving and wanting to open up a private practice, there's so many things that you just don't know. And there's so many things that you have to research and really commit to doing that work. And so that would be like my words of encouragement to people is if it's something that you want to do, whether it's a practice or a nonprofit or anything, really take the time to research. You're not going to know everything and you're going to learn as you go. It's really trial and error. But really setting yourself up for success with setting that foundation, and finding out, what is it, like what licenses do I need to get? What contracts do I have to have in place? You always have to somehow have money in the bank, however you're going to get it there. You always have to have that. And coming up with some kind of a plan before just kind of jumping in.
Thank you for sharing that.
And I know you mentioned that, there's always different things that come up. So, in your journey to getting your business to where it is now, were there any specific challenges or obstacles that you faced that you don't mind sharing?
A couple of them, I think one of them is essentially you're alone, right? Like it's when you think about it and you're like, oh, I'm gonna work for myself, no one's gonna tell me what to do, right? And then you do it and you're like, oh, really? Nobody's gonna tell me what to do. I gotta figure this out. So there's that piece of like, if you have questions, you can network with colleagues, you can network with other people that have done it. But essentially, it's up to you to make this work. And so sometimes that gets a little bit challenging. And then, I think the other piece specifically for me, and I can imagine for other social workers and therapists going into practice, is if you're accepting insurance, it's a complete nightmare to learn everything that they take and they don't take. And it's one of the biggest components of my practice because I want to make it affordable for people. So, learning that credentialing, I did the credentialing for myself, mainly because I wanted to learn it. There's people that you can like pay to do that, but I wanted to learn the process of that. And when you're doing it and you're submitting claims, you're kind of just like, well, I hope this works out. And if it doesn't, they're gonna tell me. And
They'll let
then
you know.
and then you learn if it doesn't work out why it didn't work out. So I think those two things have been the biggest challenges going into the practice is like these things that you don't necessarily learn in the social work field, either from school or from experience. We don't learn the business aspect of it.
Yeah, we definitely do not. And I think that towards the end of my programming, I found out that you were also able to do like an MBA while you're working for your MSW. And that's supposed to be, like a whole nother master's degree. It's supposed to be our way of learning, how to be a part of the resources that are available for people in a different way. And I feel like that's so challenging.
No, it definitely is. And it's a different business than, opening up a nonprofit. Or opening up like a retail store or anything like that, like the licensing and the LLC and everything is very different when you're applying, opposed to other businesses.
Are you able to provide a little bit of insight on that, if you don't mind?
We actually, similar to like attorneys, have to have a PLLC instead of an LLC. And, you have to send, so you can choose your therapy name. And this is part of this is specific to New York. Your therapy name can't have counseling in it.
Oh, really?
Because then that's the only service
That
you
you can
can
provide.
provide.
Gotcha.
So you can choose your name, but then you have to send it to the Department of Education, and they have to approve that your name is okay. So once you do that process, and that's it's going to the state, so you're waiting a little bit longer than you probably should. And then once it's approved, then there's more paperwork that you need to file. And then to get credentialed, you have to have an address. And most people don't want to use their home address, even if
Very
you're
true.
providing telehealth services. So then you have to go purchase a virtual address. And the virtual address, depending on where you choose, the price is higher depending on the city.
Really?
So, it's all like little things where you're like, I would have never thought of that. Like I would have picked something that's like close to me or like New York City. But New York City is more expensive than Westchester. And I'm sure that's pretty similar across states. And you, as a therapist, you have to have your LCSW or, any other mental health professional license like in your title at the end of your name. So if you look at my full practice name, it's Mind Muse Therapeutic Consulting. LCSW PLLC,
Okay.
which is insane to me because I'm like, that's so long. Who's remembering that? You know? So yeah, all of that has to get approved. There's a lot of things that you just continue to learn as you go. And, you know, giving that information out to other social workers as they create their private practice, I think is really helpful because when you're in it, you're just like, I just want to do this and get it done. Like, I just want to do therapy. I don't want to
Right.
do this
Just want
other
to help
stuff.
people.
Right. But, you know, then there's like some fun aspects, right? Like you're creating, and this might not be fun for everybody, but you're creating like your structure
Right.
and like contracts for people to sign and your policies for the practice, my logo, you know, and like coming up with color schemes that you want to go with. And doing some of the branding things, like all of that was really exciting and motivating to keep going.
And I can say your logo looks really, really great. So you did a great job.
Thank you. I
Of
just threw
course.
in some ideas, but I sent that over to Spark Creative, who did my logo and my website.
There we go. Now we know who to go to. So, in terms of looking for information, because I'm sure, like you said, you've got to do your research, you've got to prepare before you're really ready to start. Do you feel like the information was easily accessible in comparison to how maybe other businesses are in terms of information? Or do you feel like you had to do a lot of digging and a lot of question asking to maybe your network of people to find the right flow for yourself to getting things done for the business to start?
I think it was the latter. You know, I don't think a lot of the ways that things are kind of written online don't feel like they're in English. You know, and so I'm like reading it over and over and I'm like, okay, I think I got it. And then I'll read it again and I'm like, no, wait, do they mean this? And so those type of things, like I will, you know, I'll network with therapists who've been in practice. I'm in a couple of therapy groups on Facebook,
Okay, yeah,
and
I heavily use Facebook social work groups for networking as well.
yeah, and that's really helpful. It's just asking questions, and people are always willing to, you know, give you some feedback based on their experience. But I wouldn't say that information is as accessible as maybe to opening a nonprofit. It's just, I think it's more specific. And so you really need to know what those details are and that you're meeting the requirements of whoever, you know, is your license under. So with like us, it's, you know, the NASW, and just making sure that you're meeting certain criteria.
Thank you so much for sharing those pieces of information. I know that that was helpful for me, because you definitely shed some light on things that I did not know. And I'm sure that there are some social workers or just people in general out there that are interested into getting into entrepreneurship and making their own business that could utilize some of the things that you said. So, is there any advice or something that you would say to someone who is looking into opening their own business, whether it's for, the mental health community or another community per se?
You know, I think one of the main things is financially make sure that you're ready to do it. Especially if you're bringing on employees. Because, and you know, again, going back to insurance, like insurance doesn't cut you a check till 4 to 6 weeks from the service date. So if you're going to have people that you need to pay, even paying yourself, you have to prepare for that delay. Even if you're private pay, you have to prepare for, you know, a card declining or clients not being able to pay on time. All of that kind of has to be thought about before going into your own business. And one of the big things that really motivated me to make the transition was I was working so hard for someone else. You know, and it goes back to like that work culture of working past your 9 to 5 hours and doing things that, you know, probably could have waited till the next day. But if If we're willing to put in that much time for somebody else's company, we can do it for ourselves.
Exactly. Thank you. That's a really, really strong quote.
Yeah.
That's a gem for sure. And do you feel like there are any kind of certain characteristics or traits that people need to be able to succeed in starting their own business?
I think you got to be organized. You have to keep things in one place or learn what your organization looks like, because there's just so many different pieces to it that you'll need access to as you're building. I think the other really important thing is to stay consistent and not be hard on yourself when you need a break. You can't keep going 7 days a week building out a practice and not taking any type of break and expecting yourself to show up every day, at 100%. So being okay with giving yourself the time that you need in between while you're building.
Well, thank you so much for this conversation today. I do want to take a chance to allow you to kind of plug in and, share what your resources are. So you'll be able to find a little bio and some links about Judy on our Who's on the Show on our website. But I do want to give her a chance just to kind of shout out her business.
Sure. So you can follow me on Instagram. It's MindMuse Therapy. And then you'll also see the link to my website, and you can get more information about the practice, the services we provide, and other clinicians that are in the group practice.
Perfect, perfect. Thank you so much for coming on and speaking with us, Judy. I'm so excited for everyone to tune into this conversation and hopefully write down notes on a lot of the things that you're saying, because I know I'll be going back and having a listen and jotting down some notes for myself too. So I hope that you enjoy the rest of your day and that your business continues to thrive.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Of course, of course. And I hope that everyone has a great day. If you haven't had a chance, please check out our website at Let's Talk About It with Shania Kelly to, of course, view our other episodes and also plug into today's episode and any extra information. Thank you for talking about it with me, everyone.
I am looking for fellow podcasters and community members to collaborate with me on episodes for this podcast. So if you're interested in coming on and talking about any of the various social topics that come to mind, please fill out the request form in the description. And if you haven't already, please connect with me on my social media platforms on my Linktree. There is also a link for a voice message to leave your thoughts and feelings, and they might even get aired on an episode, so don't hold back. Thank you again for talking with me. Bye.